Hi, welcome to VLectures. This is Ajay Prabhu once again, entering into the second chapter of Banking Fundamentals. Let's take a brief overview of what we learned in the first chapter. First chapter was specifically understanding the evolution of banking across the globe. If we say across the globe, India had also gone through various civilizations. And the same thing applies as far as the value of the object. Again, we don't have to cover money because we have already understood the basic concepts of money, how it changed from the barter system till the latest clearing system. The same thing exists in our country too. But then what makes it different from the world banking? Definitely, there are various points of difference in our Indian banking also. Everyone will agree, Indian banking also existed since the ancient times. And when I say ancient times, the best time I can take you back to the heavens. In Hindu mythology, we all know Lord Kuber, king of money. Is he not a banker? He is a banker in the context of what we learn banking. The first slide which we are going to see will give you some brief references of how banking existed right from the ancient time. To understand it simply in a structured manner, we'll try to understand banking growth in India before the Mughal entry, during the Mughal entry, after the exit of Mughal entry, the entry of British, and when it comes to British, we can easily connect it with our economy and growth. That is how we enter pre-nationalization or independence, prior to independence, later to independence, when nationalization happened, and after the nationalization, a very big revolution in banking that happened in the 1990s, wherein banking licenses were issued to new private sector banks. And we are also going to touch up with the latest revolution that is going to happen, that is a fresh licenses to be given again to private sector banks. The basic idea is to take banking to the unbanked rural areas, which will improve the proportion of banking amongst the masses. We are going to see how the statistics of per branch or banking for the people per person increased or decreased. It has definitely the banking comfort or the branch comfort for the customer as a whole has been improving over a period of time. After this, we are also going to touch up on the latest global regulations. India does not want to stay back. And it also wants to go with the world, especially the international regulations which have been brought in by the Basel Committee. This Basel Committee has built good confidence amongst the global players since we have already opened up our economy for globalization along with the liberalized reforms. Foreigners want to do business with us only if we have good banking systems, and this is where the Basel Committee norms comes into the picture for maintaining adequate capital on the basis of risk assets. Gone are the days when we can book income on the basis of accrual system. Now there are provisions for booking your income on realistic basis, not on accrual basis. So there are prudential norms for booking your income, for classifying your assets into standard, substandard, doubtful and loss. We have rules for everything. There is transparency in our banking system as there is transparency in the global market. So having said that, let us come to the first slide for chapter 2, origin of Indian banking. As I had said, banking in India existed since the ancient times. Vedic texts as old as 2000 BC to 1400 BC makes mention of money lending practices. The words used were different. Like, for example, a debt was called a Rina. Rina mentioned, and this is mentioned in the Riga Veda, the oldest scriptures in Hindu mythology. In the earlier times, money lending was considered, or in the, specifically if we want to say the Aryan times, money lending was considered as one of the four honest pursuit. Which were the other three? The other three being the tilling the soil, harvesting and trading. One interesting thing I would like to tell you, now the interest rates are regulated by our central bank, that is Reserve Bank of India. The interest rates in the ancient times were based on the profile of the customer. Different rates were applied for different types of people. Different rates were applied while the goods were transited from one place to another. The route can be through the forest, the route can be to some transport of bullock cart, the route can be through the sea, etc., etc. So based on the risk factors, the interest rates were arrived. Lending again referred a different names. In the Buddhist Jataka writings between 7th century and 32nd century, lending also has a reference. Kauthilya's Arthashastra asked the king to regulate interest rate and make rules for debtors and creditors. A very strong kingdom of Chandragupta Maurya in the Mauryan period had an instrument called Adesha. What is Adesha? Adesha is simply an order on a banker desiring him to pay the money of a note to a third person. Can you guess what do we call this in the present context? It's nothing but a check, but it was called by Adesha. These are some common names from ancient India. The meaning is same or similar to what we do in the present context. In ancient India, coins were either punch-marked or cast in silver and copper. While coins represented a physical equivalent, credit system involves bills of exchange facilitating interspatial transfers. Now please understand the difference between the coins and the bills of exchange. Coins were portable. You can easily exchange from one person to another. But what happens when you don't want to carry the coins? Like people were traveling from one city to another. There was a risk, there was robbery, there was dacoity. So people wanted to be safe. So people used to deposit money in one city, ask the moneylender to make arrangement for payment to another city. The moneylender will issue a bill of exchange which is directing another person in another city to make the payment to the same person who is traveling from one city to another. So you have the comforts of making payment on the spot or deferring your payment when you travel from one city to another. As far as the coins are concerned, most of the cities have RBI museums. In Mumbai, we have it at Churchgate, a must visit for all students of banking. You also get beautiful literature on the coins available right from the ancient times, and more than the literature, your personal viewing will give you lots of knowledge. You can literally see the actual coins right from the ancient period till the present. You can also see the various notes available from the ancient period till the present, and you get good literature on it to understand why these coins had evolved over a period of time, what was the purpose of punching the coin or flattening the coin or making the big size of the coin. Some more norms or names available, loan dates forms were called the Rina Patra or the Rina Lekha. Buddhist period, loan dates were called the Inapanna. In the Mughal periods, loan deeds were called the Dastavej. Dastavej were again of two types. The first one, Dastavej-e Indul Talib, was payable on demand, and dastaveji miadi was payable after a stipulated time, which we in present terms simply called demand bills and usance bill. Demand bills are payable immediately, usance bills are payable after a certain period of time. You also had pay orders, which is similar to a demand draft. You buy it from your bank, and they were called as a barrettes during that period. As I had said earlier, now we will try to see how banking evolved in India prior to the Mughal period, during the Mughal period, and after the exit of Mughal, that is in the British period. What were the salient features of banking till the Mughal period? Bankers, moneylenders were extremely well-to-do. And why they were extremely well-to-do? Because people used to deposit money at one moneylender and received the receipt for the same. People could get their exchange facility with the moneylenders. Bankers were so well-to-do that they built temples and financed the kings also, as was done in Europe. Most villages had certain communities like the Sarafs, the Shaits, the Chettis, the Mahajans, who financed trades and commerce. Some of these communities are existing today, and basically they carry the surnames even today. If you carefully understand, these surnames are actually telling that they were doing the business of financing trade and commerce since the ancient times, and they are carrying the same name based on their profession even today. Bills of exchange were issued on foreign countries mainly for financing the seaborne trade, as I had said earlier. People wanted to send goods, go from one place to another. The best route was issue a bill of exchange rather than carrying it in their pockets. India has given a very important instrument, a financial instrument, to the world, which is in the form of hundi. Hundi simply means a bill of exchange. What does a hundi do? Hundi simply writes in the mode of payment to a certain person, through a certain person. Again, hundis are of two types: the darshani hundi, which is again a demand bill, and the muddati hundi, which is a usance bill. Again, I repeat, demand bill has to be paid immediately. Usance bill can be paid after a certain period. Banking in the Mughal period. It was a big revolution as far as banking in the Mughal period is concerned. Big revolution simply because there was a huge growth in international trade. Mughal introduced their own coins. The finance was arranged partly by cash and partly by credit instruments, which means both the bills of exchange and the hundis were used. Bankers enjoyed prominent position in the society. Obviously, when you provide money to the common people as well as to the kings, you not only establish strong contacts with the kings as well as the people, as well as you earn interest, you earn profit. So it is a win-win way always. Bankers often acted as the revenue collectors and bankers to the government. This is similarly to what RBI does now. Not all entirely, but a part of the total functions performed by RBI in today's banking. Banking during British period. British had monopoly in our country for over 150 years. But the basic problem of banking during the British period was Indian banking, in spite of being reasonably developed, the British could not take advantage as it was conducted in vernacular. We had so many Indian languages in our country, but Britishers knew only one. They could not understand or make use of different languages available in different parts of our country. Local bankers were unaware about the practices in Europe. Britishers had something in mind. They had their own banking system, which had come from Europe, as we had seen, the European banking and the American banking had their own rules and regulations. There were different regulations made by their central bank or by their regulatory authority. This was not known to our local bankers. Hence, neither the British understood our language nor our local bankers understood the European regulations. The result? English merchant houses, which is commonly called as agency houses, were set up to finance trade and commerce. Officials of East India Company used to earn handsome salary. How did they save? They used these agency houses. They deposited their savings to the agency houses and got good interest or sometimes even a part of profit. Agency houses also borrowed funds from indigenous bankers. We are going to see shortly what do you mean by indigenous bankers. These are typically unorganized form of banking. Money lenders as well as the East India Company. Agency houses carried out banking activities in addition to the trading activities. The basic purpose of East India Company, as we all know, was trading. But over and above trading, because of the compulsions of carrying cash, using cash, and anything and everything related with cash, some entity was required. And because of these limitations, they were forced to enter into banking business. Hence, they were doing two type of activities, one side trading, on the other side banking also. We'll see what happens when people sail in two ports shortly in the next slide. But before that, let's see the beginning of modern banking in India. 1771 marks the establishment of Bank of Hindustan in Calcutta, and this particular milestone, we say, starts the phenomenon of modern banking in India. Bank of Hindustan was established in India by a European company known again as an agency house of Alexander and Company. Another bank which came into being was the Bengal Bank in 1784. This bank was not connected with any agency house. It was a private ownership. All the above said banks were closed down and are now defunct. We don't see the names in our current banking list. I had just a few slides before said sailing two boats becomes difficult. And the same thing happened with the agency house also. The agency house found it difficult to manage the banking function as well as the trading function. A need to start a joint bank in India similar to the one in England was felt. And this resulted into General Bank of India formation in 1786. General Bank of India was established as the first joint stock bank in India, and the liability of its shareholders was limited. In 1787, it was appointed as a banker to the government. So it was not only doing the day-to-day banking, but it was also acting as a banker to the government. Now the real need of Western type credit institution was filled. And that marked establishment of the first presidency bank. What do you mean by presidency bank? Presidency banks were established for doing banking business on behalf of East India Company under the English Charter. It is typically acting as a banker to the government. And that's how the first presidency bank in the form of Bank of Bengal was established in 1806. By the East India Company. A uniform currency was established throughout British India in 1835, but people were prohibited from dealing in foreign exchange and raising funds outside the country. This was a big blow to the indigenous bankers as they lost the lucrative opportunity of money changing. They could do only local business, but when it came to raising funds outside the country or dealing in foreign exchange, they were not allowed. more need of Western type of trade institutions was felt after the tremendous success of the first presidency bank in the form of Bank of Bengal. And this resulted into formation of two more presidency banks. One is the Bank of Bombay in 1840 and the Bank of Madras in 1843. The presidency banks performed central banking functions as well as acted as bankers to the government. Now, more and more things started happening in banking arena during the British period. But suddenly, the American Civil War, as we all know, erupted. The war broke out in America, but the benefits flew in our country. Initial ventures into banking during American Civil War. Banks were floated to finance merchants selling cotton to Lancashire. Why? The British had some special favor for us? No. The basic reason was American cotton was no longer available to the English, and hence they wanted manufacturers to produce cotton for the people of England. And these banks were primarily meant for speculation and not for finance industry. Consequently, all of them failed because the basic purpose itself was a shaky one, and Indians withdrew from running banking business. Thereafter, banking in India remained the entire domain of Europeans till the beginning of the 20th century, where lots of things happened in banking. Let's see what happened. The first purely Indian joint stock bank was established in the form of the Oath Commercial Bank, established in 1889. This was followed by the Punjab National Bank in 1894. What do I mean by purely Indian joint stock bank? Prior to this, there were joint stock banks, but the ownership was partial Indian, partial foreign in the form of Europeans. But these two banks had purely Indian ownership. The beginning of the 20th century also had the exchange banks for financing of foreign trade. Now, these are the different type of banks totally looking after foreign trade. The presidency banks were looking after central banking also, but these were exclusively looking after financing of foreign trade. Indian banks were not able to enter financing of foreign trade because they lacked the experience and training as these exchange banks had. So they were more or less out of the forex business. We all know our freedom fighters had lots of leadership qualities, lots of creative ideas to grow and make our economy grow. The Swadeshi movement was one of such. What was happening was the foreign products were eating out the income of our economy, the income of our people, and finally the money was going out without any retention. This was not acceptable to our freedom fighters, and the Swadeshi movement was launched in 1905. The Swadeshi movement gave great fillip to the starting of Indian banks. What was the condition then? Let's see that first. Banking was not easily available to the middle class and the lower middle class. Rates of interest were phenomenally high by the presidency banks. Indian businessmen found it difficult to finance for international trade. Indians set up banks to assert themselves during this period. One interesting thing I would like to say, everybody must be knowing Udupi district in South Kannada, Karnataka. And this particular district is called the cradle of Indian banking. You know why? During the Swadeshi movement, as big as four banks were established in this small district itself. Hence, this district is called the cradle of Indian banking. Which were the banks established? We have a list of them. Bank of India, Corporation Bank, Indian Bank, Bank of Baroda, Canara Bank, Central Bank were some of the prominent banks which are still surviving today, established during the Swadeshi movement because it were established by the people of our country. Suddenly, the banking crisis erupted in 1913. Tremendous amount of competition resulted in high rates because now we could see the foreign banks, Indian banks competing against each other on the basis of rates, on the basis of services. High rates offered on deposits and there was massive speculation. Deplorable departure from sound banking practices, lending for the sake of lending. No cardinal principles followed. Funds locked in advances were difficult for realization. There were no non-performing assets norms as we have today. Liquidity in the bank was as low. If the funds lent are stuck up, are not recovered, from where do the banking business go? Banking is basically a business of accepting money for the sake of lending. If the money that is given is not coming back, then how can the banking business continue? Both presidency banks and exchange banks were viewing it remotely. None of them wanted to help the Indian banks. They stayed away due to disinterest for internal trade. What they were interested in was only external trade. Whatever things they can send to their country, they were hardly bothered about internal trade, and the entire focus of theirs was on the foreign exchange. 94 banks collapsed during this period of 1913 and 1918. Most affected states were Punjab, as high as 35 banks were closed. Bombay, as high as 21 banks were closed. A tabular column of these 94 banks is given in this slide. You can see 1913, number of banks that failed 12. It had an authorized capital 274, paid up capital 35. 1914, 42 banks failed, authorized capital 710. Paid up capital 109. 1915, number of banks failed 11. Authorized capital 56, paid up capital 5. 1916, 13, authorized capital 231, paid up capital 4. 1917, 9, authorized capital 76, paid up capital 25. And see the last part. 1918, 7 banks failed, 209 authorized, paid up capital only 1 lakh. What does this mean? Even the smallest confidence of the customer or the investor in the form of paid up capital was shattered. Then came the First World War, spurt in Indian exports, same way like American Civil War. The war was happening in different part of the globe, benefits were coming to India. Spurt in Indian exports and steep increase in demand for Indian currency. You know what is the health of Indian currency currently? Every day I was trying to quote for this present, the currency value for this quotation. Every other day I had to change the currency value. I started with 60, it went to 61, 62, 63, now it has already crossed 64 also. Government began to play more positive role in promoting industrialization. They wanted goods and services. Now they started feeling internal trade is important because the war was happening in their country. Indian joint stock banks registered an increase in deposits. Friends, this is the basic impact on the economy. Whenever the surplus, banking, other definition for banking is taking the surplus, surplus means the savings, and channelizing the surplus to the deficit, which means towards lending or to give it as a borrowing to the needy. Who are the needy in our economy? Generally the corporates. The corporates requires funds for production. Once the production happens, the consumption happens. The consumption generates profits for the company. These profits are again deployed in the bank. That's how the cycle of production, consumption, profit goes on and on. And this was actually demonstrated as an impact of First World War. Cash balance in the bank increased substantially. Indian joint stock banks registered an increase in deposits of over 10%. Shortly after the end of the World War, banks found their deposits shrinking. Why? Because government tried to take away the entire money in the form of issuing India war loans. Suddenly the crunch of deposits. Deposits were coming but were going out in the form of India war loans. After presidency banks, the next important thing or milestone that was achieved in Indian banking was establishment of the Imperial Bank of India. Imperial Bank of India was not some new entity as such, but basically it was a merger of all the three presidency banks. The presidency bank acted as quasi central banks but were merged in 1921 to form the Imperial Bank of India, and anything to be done as far as the Government Act is concerned required some legislation, and the legislation was in the form of Imperial Bank of India Act 1922. What was the need of this merger? Imperial Bank of India performed a number of functions which were normally carried out by a central bank in addition to the normal functions of commercial banks. Its main aim was to safeguard government's balances and implement the financial policy of the government. Consolidations, transparency was a basic purpose of merging. All three banks were established at different locations. So when they were merged into one, there was central direction, central monitoring, central accounting for the Imperial Bank of India, and lots of information can be culled out and lots of decisions could be taken based on this merger. And this was effectively done by the Britishers. But still, Imperial Bank of India was not able to provide the required degree of support to the banking sector. Even though the Indians felt the banking was not coming to the common people, just like RBI appoints different committees to study different problems occurring in the banking sector, during that period also, the Crown or the East India Company used to appoint different committees. One amongst them was the Hilton Young Commission. Hilton Young Commission observed a serious drawback in the Indian monetary and banking system. The control of currency and credit were in two different hands. How can two different people talk about the same thing? Currency and credit both goes together. Just as we require deposits for giving loans, the same way currency and credit goes hand in hand. RBI does it for us currently. Imperial Bank was to be transformed. The commission therefore recommended a setting of a central bank of the country. The banking crisis in the early 30s and the need to have a new approach to banking led to Reserve Bank of India Act 1934. Again, legislation first, followed by establishment of Reserve Bank of India in 1935. This started the central banking for our country, but again, central banking under foreign control. Reserve Bank of India, established in 1935, had widespread authority all over undivided India, because then Bangladesh, Pakistan was also a part of our country. So Reserve Bank of India was also making policies and guidelines for the entire undivided India. The first governor of Reserve Bank of India was Sir Osborne Smith. Do you know who is the current governor? current governor, of course, Mr. D. Subba Rao, but he is going to retire in September, and government has already appointed Mr. Raghuram Rajan as the new governor, and he is the 23rd governor of Reserve Bank of India, and he is already seeing lots of challenges to be coped, and I hope he does well for our economy as per his reputations. In 1949, the Banking Regulation Act was enacted, which empowered the Reserve Bank of India to regulate, control and inspect the banks in India. And finally, after independence, Reserve Bank of India was nationalized on January 1, 1949. This gave our country a tremendous tool to control the monetary policies as well as the economy of our country. Reserve Bank of India had a wide range of powers. All banks having a paid up capital of rupees 5 lakhs or more were included in the second schedule and brought under the Reserve Bank of India I. What do you mean by the second schedule? Reserve Bank of India Act 1934 has various schedules along with the Act. A specific section mentions what are the requirements for any banking entity to get enlisted in the second schedule. If any bank complies with these conditions mentioned in the RBI Act 1934, then they get special privileges. Two of the best privileges the bankers enlisted in the second schedule are, they can get loans from RBI, and secondly, they can be a part of the clearing system of RBI. If you are not enlisted, that means you are not following RBI guidelines. That means you cannot take loans from RBI. You cannot participate in the clearing system. These banks are required to maintain with Reserve Bank a balance equivalent to at least 5% of their demand liabilities and 2% of their time liabilities. What do you mean by demand liabilities? What do you mean by time liabilities? Demand liabilities are payable as soon as the customer makes a demand. Examples of demand liabilities: your saving bank account, your current account, wherein you cannot say to the customer, please come after today. As soon as he makes a demand, the payment has to be done immediately. Whereas this is not the case in case of your time liability, or we can also say the term liabilities. The best example to give of time liability or term liability are your fixed deposit receipts. Whatever investment you make for a certain period, another requirement of a term liability or a time liability is you will not withdraw again and again or as frequently as you withdraw in a saving account or a current account. The Reserve Bank became the banker's bank as well as the government's bank. The basic functions of Reserve Bank of India is excellently quoted in its preamble. Let's read this preamble. It says, to regulate the issue of banknotes. Everybody agrees? Yes, no other entity in our country can issue banknotes except Reserve Bank of India. And keeping of reserves, very, very important. Now the currency is deteriorating. Everybody is concerned about the balance of payment, the current account deficit, and everything is related with the reserves we are maintaining. So RBI keeps a close eye on the reserves with a view to securing the monetary stability. We saw what happened in 1991. We hardly had 15 days reserves to manage our imports. Even though currently we are having 4 to 5 months, but the fear is about the increasing, the depreciation of the value of rupee every day. RBI is doing lots of activities to control the monetary stability by taking care of the depreciation. Yesterday only we read in the newspapers RBI has sold out dollars for controlling the rupee value. Generally, to operate the currency and credit system of the country to its advantage. What do you mean by operate the currency and credit system? Currency is obviously based on the inflation. Credit system specifically meant for growth. There was a lot of tussle we see in last few months between the finance minister and the RBI governor. Finance minister considered about growth, RBI considered about inflation, price stability. Price stability, rates of increase, rates of loans goes on increasing. Difficult for the customer to borrow. If the customers are not borrowing, the products are not sold. Products are not sold, growth of the company gets stunted. Finally, everything related to the economy gets affected. As far as RBI's role is concerned, RBI specifically focuses on the credit system. Finance Ministry also takes care of the growth. Again, specifically to its advantage. To its advantage in the sense, advantage for the country. Section 6 of Banking Regulation Act 1949 specifically mentions main functions of bank. Main activities of RBI, if we want to know, can be summarized into these following points. Monetary authority. Everybody knows RBI controls our economy through monetary policies. The annual policy comes in the month of April. Besides that, there are four quarterly reviews, and in between the quarters, there are four midterm reviews, specifically revising and fine-tuning our monetary policy, which takes care of the interest on loans given by RBI to banks and even from banks to RBI. Issuer of currency, nobody or no other entity in our country can issue currency except RBI. All this currency is printed in our authorized printing presses, transferred from the printing press to the currency chest. Initially, only RBI was the currency chest. Then it delegated its power to State Bank of India. And now, some of the public sector banks are also having currency chest. From this currency chest, money is given, fresh notes are given to the customers, soil notes, circulated notes are pulled out of the economy and sent back to the currency chest for decirculation. So this cycle goes on, issuing of currency, weeding out the mutilated and the soil notes out of the currency, and this exclusively is done by the issuer of currency, which is Reserve Bank of India. Banker and debt manager to the government, just as you and I require money to keep the deposit as well as take loans, government also needs to do the same thing on behalf of the country. And for them, Reserve Bank of India is the best banker to the government. Like bankers also requires money, they have interbank transactions to give money, take money. They have a different market for that, different rate for that. Again, RBI also does the same thing as far as giving loans to the banks or taking money from the bank. Regulator of the banking system. Any due regulation happening on the interest rate, whether it's deposits or credits, any new policy wherein you need to take permission from RBI for a license of setting up a bank or a branch or installing an automatic teller machine or installing an electronic service like internet banking, mobile banking, etc., etc., requires strict adherence to the guidelines and directions issued by Reserve Bank of India. That's where it acts as the regulator of the banking system. Manager of foreign exchange. Yesterday only we saw RBI sold dollars for establishing or containing the rupee value. Stop rupee from depreciation. Manager of foreign exchange, that's how it does, sells its reserves ICS reserves. Maintaining financial stability. This is how it fine-tunes the rates of interest given to the banks, taken loans taken from the banks. Regulator and supervisor of the Payment and Settlement System. Payments and Settlement Systems Act has been introduced in our country specifically for laying guidelines on your electronic payments. NPCI is the umbrella organization which creates, manages, and takes care of the distribution of mass electronic payments. Who makes the rules? The regulator and supervisor of payment and settlement systems. RBI makes the rules for banks as far as the payment and settlement system is concerned. Besides all this, it also plays a development role. Development role in the sense it can form an apex bank for taking care of certain activities like your Development Credit Corporation or your Insurance Corporation.